on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
I was waking up at 5 a.m. in the morning. There was just like a 1 hour run and then start doing the things that I should be doing on my own. Then go at the marketing meeting, the sales meeting, and then talk to customers, go to meetings, meet with the AI team, meet with the development team, meet with the designers. I was like having this
everywhere.
Yeah. And that's the curse of being a founder. And like, I really wanted to be the solo founder because for me, Veriloji was not, I was going to do this and I'm going to like exit in 3 years and start a new thing. It's more like, I don't know how Simon Sinek puts it, more like an infinite game for me. Like, I want to do this, not the Silicon Valley startup, do it fast, yeah. Sell, and but rather than I want this as a sustainable business that really helps people with regard to privacy.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast sub-series called the Legal Tech Startup Spotlight, which aims to shine light on the stories behind legal tech startups and their founders. And for this episode, I am joined by Mertcan Boyar. Mert is a law graduate from Istanbul Bilgi University and the founder of Veriloji, an intelligent workflow automation system that helps privacy lawyers audit any website for privacy compliance risks. Previously, he worked as a lawyer in Istanbul, Turkey, and he is also affiliated with the Turkish Entrepreneurship Foundation and the Privacy Innovation Lab at Istanbul Bilgi University. Mert, welcome to the show. I'm super excited to have you here.
Hello, Hadesa. Thank you for the invitation. Likewise, it's a great pleasure for me to be here. Like I told you, I'm a little fanboy in Istanbul for the Law of Tech podcast series. So really, really got excited when you first contacted me. So thanks. Let's do this.
Now, I'm super excited to talk about Veriloji, of course, but before we actually do that, the idea of the podcast is, and I just briefly also mentioned it to you, is to start off with talking about you, of course, better introducing yourself, because I don't think my description did any justice to what you've been up to. And then we'll move towards talking about the startup that you founded, Veriloji, some of the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned, and finally, also taking a look at the future and what the future for the company holds, but also generally your views on the future for the legal industry. So maybe to start, do you want to kick off the episode by talking a little bit more about yourself, your professional background, and how you eventually entered into the legal tech industry?
Yeah. So I graduated from Istanbul Bilgi University Faculty of Law in 2017. I have done various internships during my studies in corporate law firms that specialize in M&As, merger and acquisitions, etc. But I realized that having like near 100 plus 100 lawyers as co-workers was not that fulfilling for me, because you're just like a little tiny thing at the system, and like if you die, nothing would change, everything will go on the next day, and that didn't really fulfill me. Then I gained experience on more boutique law firms, and they were specializing on internet law and on subjects like payment systems, e-commerce, data protection, etc. And soon I realized that my love is for privacy, and privacy is the frontier that I would like to focus. And then I received an IAPP certification, the CIPPE, following that up with becoming the first young privacy pro in IAPP Turkey chapter. And more experience I gained in privacy, I fell in love with the problem itself. And that eventually led me to the privacy tech domain, actually by solving my own problems, my own pains as a privacy lawyer. And then realizing that the things that I'm building actually would help every privacy lawyer that is working in this field. And that eventually turned to the Veriloji story. So as a short summary, I think this would be it.
Yeah, no, super interesting. And I want to talk more about Veriloji in a minute and to gain more insight into what exactly you guys are doing in this sense. I was wondering, what made you eventually decide to create your own startup? Because, I mean, it's one thing to learn about them, and it's a whole other thing, I can imagine, to actually do it yourself from scratch and just make everything work. So what made you decide to start up your own company?
Actually, like, one big appetite of mine is to create things, actually. Since I was a kid, I was always into music, and there's this appetite of creation for me that unfortunately the legal landscape didn't quite fulfill. So actually, after as being part of the Entrepreneurship Foundation, which I also would like to briefly describe in a minute, I was surrounded by entrepreneurs because I was the first law student to be selected there. And there was this great minds that done lots of things that I wouldn't even imagine at those ages. So we were 20, 21, 22, and these guys were really changing the world. And they really inspired me to start my own company and do something good for the world. Especially there was this, again, big opportunity, big chaos when all these privacy laws around the world was being enacted and being went into force. And I told myself, this is a good time to start because you're 24 now and you can take the risks that you can take perhaps several years later. It would be the right time to do this and hold your breath and jump. So realizing or seeing all these startups and the power of scalability, the power of technology, that really got me intrigued because rather than helping 15 clients at the same time, so you could actually be helping a million people at the same time using this technology. And this really got inspired me. And once I went out and tried to assess the market, understand what people were doing, I realized that there's nothing there with regard to technology and legal. And it's really baby steps and not even baby steps. There's not concrete examples on the market that proven itself, especially in the Turkish market. Mm-hmm. And this slow adaptation in technology also really boosted my appetite to go in there and create stuff that would eventually help people be better than they were before those tools existed. So these things came up, and that eventually led me to start the Veriloji journey.
Yeah, so really an intrinsic drive to to create something that was valuable that is valuable for many, many people. I think that starting up a company obviously is extremely risky. I mean, you said, you jump into it. That was the age where you felt that was the right time to do so. But still there's a lot of risk because you had the opportunity to either, you were a lawyer also in Turkey.
Yep.
You had the opportunity to just simply follow the path and have, at least, some degree of certainty in terms of what you were doing. And still you decided to go ahead with this. How did you kind of manage risks and opportunities in that sense?
When I started Veriloji, it started as a side hustle because in day-to-day basis, I was working on the law firm, and at nights or weekends, I was just only able to work on Veriloji. So that went around a year and a half, actually. So it wasn't that short that me jumping and becoming a full-time entrepreneur, let me say. So I needed to automate my daily tasks at the beginning. That was my calling to start Veriloji. And then I start building this MEP and start testing and validating and knocking on the doors of law firms. And again, especially in developing countries like Turkey, lawyers are more and more conservative on how they do things and their approach to technology. Some of them just kicked me out of their doors. They said, don't be ridiculous. What kind of software can do this? Some said, oh, come on, you're a young guy. We liked you. Of course, we can try it out and help you out. So there were diverse reactions from law firms that I first go and knock their doors. And like I told you, I was working at the law firm at the day. So I only had the weekends and the nights to actually work on Veriloji. But the real leap of faith where I said, all right, now it's time to go full time on this and quit the law firm, actually was when we got accepted to an incubator here in Turkey called WorkUp. It's managed by one of the biggest banks in Turkey. And actually some of my friends' startups were already got accepted in the previous batches, and I saw their growth, how beneficial the program was. And when we first got accepted there, I said, I think this is the time because like being a lawyer requires your like 100% focus. Being an entrepreneur requires for 200% of your focus. So like it wasn't like moving, and I was like lagging behind on the my day-to-day job requirements. And I said like, all right, it won't be like sustainable anymore to do this both at the same time. So I quit the law firm. And the other part where I like took a leap of faith again was actually when we won a startup challenge done by Baker and McKenzie here in mm-hmm. Turkey called Legal Tech Startup Challenge. And we won second place there. And our prize was to go to TechCrunch, Disrupt Berlin. And we met our current investors there, Startup Wise guys. And they pushed us to leave Turkey behind and move to Tallinn, Estonia, actually. And that was the second leap of faith. The only problem was it was first... day of March, and 2 weeks later COVID hit, so I got stranded for almost like a year in Tallinn. My team got stuck in Turkey, etc. So yeah, actually to sum up,
speaking of a leap of faith.
So getting those validations would be the short answer to your question, by the way. And like once you see those positive reactions and that it might be a viable business, I think that's the time. But before that, just quitting your job and just going like full time at the startup before any validation, I think that would be not an ideal scenario, by the way. So that's why like this, because like I told you, like there was this also, I needed to learn GDPR, I needed to learn KVKK, I need to learn how to run a company at the same time while building the startup, while trying to arrange all those POCs with the law firms. So I mm-hmm. took my time actually, and that process went over for almost like a year and a half in my case. Yeah. And that perfectly depends on who's actually the founders are and like what the vertical is, because like again, legal tech, privacy tech, these are like not that I don't know, like they have a certain degree of more challenge rather than the other, like just let's call it like fintech again, like more regulated. You're going face to face with lawyers and they would like to dig up everything. They would, they don't like that startup pace. They don't like the agility, unfortunately. So yeah, for our case, it, that was the story.
Yeah, you in the end managed to build your own company, which was a Berylogy. And we're finally getting to the point where I am going to ask you. do you want to tell us a little bit more? Because I can give a whole description, but I think there's no better person to ask to talk more about the company than you. So, yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about the company itself?
Yep, definitely. So, like, the actual story began when, like, I was this junior lawyer in this prestigious law firm, like, and, like, thinking I was Harvey Specter from Suits or like Ron Flum from Pied Piper. But like, again, when you leave the office at 3 a.m. in the morning, then you start to question life and certain aspects. That... And especially like during my daily, these repetitive tasks, I thought like really like legal, privacy and technology would go hand in hand. But like I was frustrated to see that there were no solutions. Actually, there were solutions, but they were quite expensive. They were quite sophisticated. That wasn't fulfilling my problems at that particular time. So the first thing I did was like... I built this like questionnaire form type of tool that I used to interview these all these business owners, and they reply the questionnaires, then the answers got turned into like data flow charts, and then that through some of my inputs turned into a data map, or like what we call in GDPR Article 30, records of processing activities kind of thing. And based on that, you could draft certain legal policies regarding that company. And like basically, this would might take like 10 hours of mine without any automation with manual process. But using this MEP, that time took down to like 5 hours or so. And that was like for me the aha moment. Yeah, like this thing works. And like even this low budget, quite like bad prototype, I would say, is actually helping me this lot. Then, like, if we could manage to do this with a proper team, with a proper infrastructure, then this would really be become a solution that every lawyer would eventually like. And we start building this tool. And in the meantime, my friends, my entrepreneur friends from the Entrepreneurship Foundation was approaching me and saying, like, Mert, we are having problems because, like, we have this great app and we submitted to Apple Store. However, Apple Store rejects my app because the privacy policy is not compliant with GDPR. And, like, before GDPR, we were only copying and pasting it from other websites, and nobody read them. And this wasn't a problem. But now, like, really, Apple doesn't put our apps in the marketplace. So can you draft a privacy policy for us? I can take you to lunch. I can take you to beer. I can take you to drinks, etc. Because they're startups and, like, real close friends, no payment at all. And, like, I've done 1, 2, 3, 4. But, like, after the 10th one, I said, like, dude, come on. It's not because, like, I have Verilogy at the side. I have, like, law firms jobs to be done in the morning. So give me a week. I won't write manually anymore. We're going to develop a mobile app that will solve all your problems. So at the beginning, like, again, I didn't have the cash. I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the skills to actually get a like experienced co-founder inside because I wasn't experienced at all. So that was like from the scratch part that I would like to also briefly describe in a minute. So, like, there was this student that I knew from a startup of my friend, a junior developer who's still in university. And I approached him and I said, like, I have this mini project. Can you help me with a mobile app? It will have, a form structure. It will ask questions. And the inputs will be turned into a privacy policy that the Apple Store will approve. And he actually, like, that was some holiday. I don't know what specific holiday, but we camped in my house for 4 days straight.
Like, what a holiday!
but like the pure, like, how can I say, the energy, the thing, it was one of the best holidays I ever had, actually. So, like, in 4 days, we built a mobile app from scratch. And in the fifth day, we sent it to Apple to be submitted to the App Store. And in the seventh day, it got accepted and it was up and running. And all these like people that hasn't any budget for the law firms, for the lawyers, use it. We generated like thousands or so privacy policies at that particular time. And that actually mobile app got us accepted to this first incubator that then I went into full time. And in the meantime, we were building this again, this data map feature that we built around some third party risk management and vendor management for data controllers. And then we built a little bot on top of it that based on your inputs gave you legal advice on how to use your CRM in a compliant way, on how to start a newsletter in a GDPR compliant way, etc. Again, all those little knowledge that the SMEs or those startups didn't have because they couldn't access to these lawyers. And but the problem there was like the startups didn't have the money, so they were using the tool, but they weren't willing us to pay any significant amount. And all these incubators, all these mentors were urging us to go to the enterprise market. But again, we didn't have the resources nor the knowledge to be vetted and, like, approved by these big enterprises. So we stuck in the middle, like, this place. Like, the mentors want to push us to this enterprise world. We want to stay in the SME world because our calling was helping these little guys access to these services without paying, like, big budget on compliance. And anyway, in the meantime, we were running all these POCs with law firms as well. But eventually, like, because of, again, my lack of knowledge and, like, believing, like, all mentors' sayings is true, then I said, all right, leave the law firms, leave the SMEs, let's focus on the enterprise side. And for a year or so, we start building this big platform for the enterprise. And actually we went there we were like more like a SaaS tool that only worked on like the inputs you put in, we deemed them correct. But then we worked on, for the enterprise part, more on the data discovery side as well. So like crawling in the service and finding personal data automatically and then reporting them. So technologies like this. But again, the problem there was the team didn't have that much of a technical skill set. So like the team got burned out, then I got separated with my co-founder, etc. So that didn't work out that much. Then we turned back to the SMEs. This is after like the end of the demo day. And then we realized that their main problem is with privacy policies, cookie policies. So let's ditch the third-party risk management part, the bot part, and just do what we do good. But the problem there was then the COVID hit, and the SMEs struggle, their pain was more of an existential problem rather than complying with privacy laws. And that really got another kick for us. And again, then we went to this lost souls era again for a couple of months, because again, like it's almost been like 3 years at that particular time, and the burnout was also heavy on me as well. So then we realized that, all right, this is not going to work. Let's just focus on one thing and one thing only, and rather than helping these people, these companies with every aspect of compliance, with every operation, even the offline processing activities that they're doing, etc., let's just focus on the website compliance part, and let's scan websites, understand the data processing activities, what kind of third-party trackers, where the servers are, what kind of legal documentation is needed, are there any consent banners, or even if there is a consent banner, is the consent banner really there to fulfill a checkbox, or that really does what it should be doing in the data level as well. And all these like things to be vetted on a website, we built a scanner around it and started reporting what is missing, what can be done right, what is wrong, what is not compliant. And based on that scan results, we generated privacy policies. But the main part with that privacy policies is, rather than providing like 10, 15 page long privacy policies like we were doing before, I came across the legal design concept when I was in Estonia, especially talking with the lawyers in Germany, in Netherlands, etc. And I realized that, like, all right, this is something that we should really understand and try to implement in Verilogy. And we called it privacy UX. And the privacy policies that we have generated are actually like have this layered layered structure inside, with like all these visualizations inside. You try to make all the privacy policies interactive that you could play around with, and become the first privacy UX tool around. That was our motto back then. The problem is, like, in order to understand like the website's data processing flows and understand the privacy policy context, we needed to get into some natural language processing as well. So now we had this like AI team, and I was like I was waking up at 5 a.m. in the morning. There was this like 1 hour run, and then start doing the things that I should be doing on my own, then go at the marketing meeting, the sales meeting, and then talk to customers, go to meetings, meet with the AI team, meet with the development team, meet with the designers. I was like having this
everywhere.
Yeah. And that's the curse of being a founder. And like, I really wanted to be the solo founder, because for me, Verilogy was not, I was going to do this and I'm going to like exit in 3 years and start a new thing. It's more like, I don't know how Simon Sinek puts it, more like an infinite game for me. Like, I want to do this, not the Silicon Valley startup, do it fast, sell, and but rather than I want this as a sustainable business that really helps people with regard to privacy. This might be privacy lawyers, this might be consumers. Anyway, that's why, like, as a founder, I needed to be everywhere because I wanted to understand everything in order to do it right. In order, to, because I was also having fun, actually. Like, it's more like a sadistic approach, I know. But I was also having fun getting out of my comfort zone, understanding all these different disciplines, all these interdisciplinary jobs, meetings, etc. So yeah, now like we still have like 9 different modules inside Verilogy, the one I have mentioned before. But for the first time, for the last 6 months or so, my new motto is less is more. So rather than like providing all these things and throwing them at the lawyer's face, we said like, all right, like in order to get a meaningful benefit from the data map, a lawyer probably needs to invest 3 or 4 hours in Verilogy. And putting that in front of a lawyer that has no prior experience with Verilogy is not really a viable go-to-market strategy. So we said, let's put all these features, big features, in stealth mode at the moment and go with something like give the lawyer a benefit in 30 seconds. And we right now only launched, again, I mean, activated this privacy scanner tool at the moment. And our strategy is in order to get the trust and show them that they could get the benefit and then start to upsell these other features that we have built in the past in the long run. So yeah, that would be a long answer to your question, Alyssa.
No, this honestly sounds like a roller coaster of a journey that you've been on. and it has raised many, many questions in my mind. First of all, I'm intrigued to know from you, how do you stay so positive if, like, you know, you pretty much got every possible hurdle on your way? So from the first, you know, a round of trying to create the company towards the COVID pandemic, which was another hurdle, and so on and so on. And you have to, you, as you said, you're having fun with it, but it requires a lot of energy, a lot of your time, and you have to be motivated for this. And from what I can see when I look at you talking about this, you are extremely happy and excited about the company. So how do you do this?
Good question. Actually, the best answer for this would come from my psychologist, I would say, my therapist.
I'll invite them next time.
Anyway, like yeah, like the biggest part is actually being the founder means you need to be alone a lot of times, and you need to get yourself up when you fall, when you burn out. And like in the last, like it's almost been 4 years since the start of this journey, and I have gone through like 3 or 4 major depressions, I would say, because like eventually, like there's this point that you can't lift yourself up and you need some external help. You need to just like take some time off, etc. And like my day-to-day habits is meditating and yoga. That is a phase, like after I'm doing that, that's really boosted my energy, boosted my optimism. Plus, like, especially in the first 2 years, like you don't know what you're doing. Like you're like a leaf, like flying through the air, like swinging there and there, and like you're doing something, but is this going the right way? Are we going fast enough? Is this the KPI that we should be tracking? So you're lost, even with all those mentors. But after a while, like the biggest change for me, the biggest, like, let me say, illumination for me was like when in those first, let's say, 2 years, when people ask me how I am, like when I met with someone from the Entrepreneurship Foundation in lunch, etc., my answer depended on how Verilogy was going and fully reflected how Verilogy was doing on that particular day. There was no merit besides Verilogy. I wasn't another entity. Verilogy and merit was the same thing. And the biggest, again, like the learning I had was separating these two entities. And like whatever happens in Verilogy stays in Verilogy, and I won't let that ruin my day or like my week or my month, and just leave it there. And I'm a separate being. And So that was one of the big things that I have discovered in order to again find this optimism back in my life. Again, like their family and friends are especially important, because like in the first years, again, they don't understand what you're trying to do. Like, why don't you become a lawyer and try to do this rather than having this stable job, having this like proven career, etc. Cool. And you're trying to again make them understand that what you're trying is like in the long term much more better and what makes you happy. Yeah. And eventually they understand and they try to again help you as much as they can. Again, like friends and especially having entrepreneur friends that has their own startups. And again, like five of my best friends have their own startups. We struggle from the same problems. So having those people always again there and helping you out is another thing that I'm really thankful for. So yeah, I think that would be my answer.
And I remember from your personal LinkedIn page, one of the things that you stated there is that, you know, this whole environment of privacy, now society nowadays, it's getting increasingly more complex and there are increasingly more questions that are being raised, of course. Well, with Viridigy, you obviously aim to tackle some of the issues that are ongoing now. What gaps, I guess, in the market in that sense do you currently see, or would you like, you know, see a response to from within the innovation centers that you're actually leading in a way?
So definitely, I think the problems there are not like purely legal or purely technical. So there is this need of interdisciplinary approach. And what we call this is like the privacy engineering here at the lab. And again, Big University is the first university in Turkey that offers a privacy engineering curriculum in its master's program as well. And Privacy Innovation Lab is actually helping that program, that syllabus as well. And like the main thing missing is, I think, this interdisciplinary, this holistic view of the problems around privacy. And all these privacy engineering methodologies that need to be implemented in every company, every tech product that we see. And unfortunately, we are nowhere near close to fulfilling these needs, these roles, this perspective, this holistic perspective. And I think one big issue is having this interdisciplinary professionals joining together to solve these big problems around privacy. And in the technical wise, like in the privacy tech wise, answer would be like we need protocols like web protocols and infrastructure that are interoperable to really reflect the needs of like privacy by design and by default, because like the current infrastructure, current protocols are not suitable. There's been work since like 2004 on certain like programs, certain protocols, frameworks, but they never conclude. And like now we have these tech giants that again, like what countries can't do, like Apple can do with one update with this cross-site app tracking issue and like displaying like summaries of privacy policies on App Store. Like from what I see, like Apple single-handedly can change things only by changing the infrastructure, changing the protocols, what GDPR couldn't done in like 4 years or so. And it has more effect. And most importantly, more awareness among consumers. And that's what we're trying to tackle with the lab and Viridigy as well with our like certain campaigns that we are doing. Because like unfortunately, people don't care for their privacy unless they lose it. And it's just like your, again, it's like your health. You don't know its value unless you lose it. And we're doing this pretty bad trade-offs with the tools and the services and the products that we're using. But again, where we're going, these little exchanges accumulate to a big thing. And then we see now democracies actually collapse just because of how these data are being handled, how people are being manipulated. So I think it's a big and long journey that we have in front of us with regard to privacy. But as like, I'm not calling myself a lawyer anymore because my entrepreneurship career is more longer than how much lawyer practices I made. But anyway, like I still got this like legal education, and I still felt this like obligation to protect people's rights and fight for the fundamental rights. And I think like privacy is the battle that I'm willing to sacrifice like 10, 15 years of my life just to like do something, change something in this matter. Yeah,
that is an extremely powerful, powerful way to end the episode. I think I think I'm almost ashamed to say anything, to be honest. I should have been like, okay, and done there. No, but I think that's extremely interesting. I think there is definitely a lot that you you can still do out there, and from what I can see, I think you've definitely got it in you. So yeah, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me, to talk about your journey, about the plans for the future, and the gaps that there are still out there that need to be filled, and from what I see will definitely be filled. So no, I want to thank you.
Thank you, Alyssa. You're doing a great job, and like thank you for the invitation. Like I told you, it's my first podcast in not in my native language, so I was out of my comfort zone, but thank you for this like quite pleasurable chat. Like I don't know how the time went by. It's like, yeah, I didn't realize it. Hope to see you in other mediums as well. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review, as it helps others discover the show. And don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast. Yeah.